Hello, everybody, and welcome to Non Sequitur News for January 31st. We're in the time machine, so it's January 30th, 2025. I am Merwad. I run Ometown.com, but the sentient AI, my co-host, isn't here today. Will be tonight. Well, tomorrow, because we're going to get out of the time. I'm going to get out of the time machine, and we're going to do another show playing catch-up, because I couldn't make it yesterday. Kind of a day behind. This is what happens when I get stuck in the time machine one time too long. Anyway, we've got 10 articles that we're going to be talking about. I'm already losing my voice. I've been talking a lot. Anyway, we're going to talk about cats that learn to associate faster than babies, microplastics in preterm placenta. I know, not everything is bright and shiny. Recreating DeepSeek's OpenAI killer. Nobody really knows AI, apparently. More snow in Hawaii than New York City. The Art of Firing People, brought to you by EA. Summer Game Fest 2025. Woohoo! I am looking forward to the summer of streaming and the Game Fest. Something is wiping out sea urchins, driven to prison, and decode this ancient script. DeepSeek couldn't do it, so I don't have $1 million. Anyway, I am Merwat again, and I run Ometown, but I want you to become a citizen, so go over to ometown.com, sign up, it's really easy, and then you'll get a seventh little icon right here, and you can submit news, and you can hide articles and stuff like that. Anyway, let's get going. I have another controller under my desk, and because I'm standing today, it was too far away. I almost fell over. Anyway, let's get into it. The first article is over in Non Sequitur News. Cats learn to associate images with words faster than babies. Scientists have also claimed that our feline friends know their names. Madison Dapchevic put this article together over at Snopes.com and has a cute cat right there. I just want to boop it. And I have three Savannah cats, and one of which seems to have learned that I am not its favorite or his favorite handler. I don't know. I booped its nose like really bad when it was a kitten. Wasn't intentional, but the way that things went down, this one cat out of the three really doesn't like me. So I can associate that, or I can understand that cats associate things faster than babies. Babies tend to forget, and babies tend to forgive. This cat does not. So anyway, a study found that cats learn to associate images with words faster than human babies do. The study is marked as true over here at this Snopes article. Again, it's Madison Dapchevic over at Snopes.com put the article together, and I hope I'm pronouncing their name properly. Oh, if you want today's articles, they are in Omatron, so exclamation or bang NSN, and Omatron will spit them out in the order that we're going through them. But the study says, though a study found that cats learn to associate images with words faster than human babies do, the authors of the research noted that their study focused on short-term associations rather than enduring associations. They also cited several other study limitations to the discussion section. The authors added that it's not clear why cats quickly form associations, but I can suggest that it's an immediate survival instinct and response. There have been other studies, and we've talked about them in the previous 3 years, because this is the fourth year of Non Sequitur News, they learn, not only do they learn faster, but they actually learn longer, faster, and typically for 4 years. Their memory lasts something akin to 4 years, which is really troubling, because I would love for this little Savannah that I've got to not hate me for years and years. Anyway, there's more over at this article. I found it really interesting, and I would like you to go over and check it out too. The article states that in October 2024, cats appeared in the headlines of notable news outlets like BBC and Science Alert when it was reported that, according to the study, they learned to associate images with words faster than babies do. Like I said, this cat certainly doesn't want to forget. Not an image, but a boop to the snoot. It does not like me because of it. So researchers at Azubu University in the Japanese city of Sagamihara near Tokyo tested 31 adult cats in what's known as switched stimuli task. It involved sitting the volunteers in front of computer screens, and when an image was displayed, the nonsensical word either kararu or pamuru, wait, sorry, parumo, was simultaneously given, and these videos and sounds were displayed in a loop until the cat looked away. The cats were then given a break before being shown the animations again, but with the words attached to each animation switched around, and during the second round, researchers noticed that cats stared longer at the visuals, with some experiencing pupil dilation. This, according to the study, the authors at least, indicates that the cats were confused by the change in their newly recognized word-image combinations, evidencing that they had previously associated the animation with the other word. So all we need to do to figure this out is to learn how to talk cat, and going pss, pss, pss doesn't cut it. Yeah, I don't know. This is one of those things where it's just been interpreted by a human, and we're anthropomorphizing something that could be meaningless. It says it could also be that cats rapidly adapt to stimuli in experimental settings, which would explain their perceived lack of interest or confusion in the second round. I think that they're, cats in particular are more attuned to just going straight instinct and feral at any given moment. I mean, the chemical goes off in their head and they're chasing greebles all around the place. So you show them an image of something that might be threatening or non-threatening, and who knows what the hell they'll actually do. Anyway, let's keep on going. We've got 10 articles to go through. So, and I'm going to try and get this done in about 30 or so minutes. So we'll see. We'll see if I can get that done. If you have questions or comments, throw them in chat. You can always follow us here on Twitch or over on YouTube. We have podcasts for all 7 of our shows, 1,800 episodes. Like I said, we've been doing Non Sequitur News for 3 years now. This is the 4th year, and we're already a month down. Time is flying by. So this next article is over in Technology Today, which is one of our 6 weekly shows. The hidden threat in the womb. I know, it's getting serious now. Microplastics are being found in preterm placentas. A new study has found that microplastics and nanoplastics accumulate in the placenta at a much higher level than in preterm births than in full-term pregnancies. Surprisingly, preterm placentas had absorbed these plastics at an earlier stage, suggesting that exposure may play a role in triggering premature delivery. So I have been following not just this, but microplastics and nanoplastics becoming more and more pervasive. And studies, researchers have found them in every part of every human. So much so that they say that something akin to 0.5% of a human's brain actually has micro and nanoplastics in it. And that's something that we talked about in a previous show. But we're finding out that these micro and nanoplastics are troublesome because, like the brain, they're traversing through blood and through every aspect of your anatomy, and who knows what actual damage is actually being caused because they're off-gassing and causing other reactions within the body. I'm actually looking to do some research in this to see just how pervasive it is. One of the things that I did was start the process. I had been doing the research to do what is essentially dark field microscopy to see if I can find nanoplastics and microplastics in liquids. Just grab a bottle of water off the shelf and hunt down the nano and microplastics that have broken off from the bottle. And that's what actually happens. And it happens quite a bit in takeout food, tires are giving it off, kicking it off. But pretty much everything that is made of plastic kicks off nano and microplastics. It's quite troubling. Well, this research is showing something a little bit more troublesome, right? That it's actually harming fetuses. So Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine put this article together. It's posted over at SciTech Daily, and there's a tiny little preemie. Oh my gosh. So the new study has found that micro and nanoplastics accumulate in the placenta at much higher levels in preterm births than in full-term pregnancies. And it might be that the process, the process of pregnancy basically allows filtering and then kicking off some of it, but it could have been there all the time. I just don't know yet. I haven't researched this part of it. This is new to me in the last 24 hours, considering this is a time machine episode. All right, so microplastics measuring less than 5 millimeters and nanoplastics, which are too small to see with the naked eye, are found throughout the environment. Research has shown that plastic exposure can be harmful to both humans and the environment and animals in general. I mean, this and the environment in general, there are studies that show that plastic is accumulating in the soil and it's actually impacting runoff because it's not permeable. So the new study reveals a link to preterm birth. The new study, set to be presented on January 30th at the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine's SMFM annual pregnancy meeting, which sounds weird, pregnancy meeting. Anyway, it reveals that microplastics and nanoplastics are present in higher concentrations. The researchers, in collaboration with the investigators from the University of New Mexico, analyzed 175 placentas using highly sensitive mass spectrometry. The study examined 100 placentas from full-term births and 75 from preterm births before 37 weeks of pregnancy. And it says advanced technology now enables us to accurately measure microplastics in ways we haven't been able to in the past. They say, in other words, a preterm delivery, not only accumulated more microplastics and nanoplastics in its placenta relative to term, but it also did so at an earlier time in the pregnancy. This hints at the possibility that the accumulation of plastics could be contributing to the risk and occurrence of preterm birth. So, unfortunately, this is going to have to be something that's monitored for a longer period of time. And see if this is an ongoing trend, in that because the ramifications are that preterms are caused by micro and nanoplastics, as well as other environmental concerns, possibly. But a preterm babies typically have longer tail issues with health. But they say, you know, combined with other research, the study adds to the growing body of evidence ranging from heart disease to potentially stroke that demonstrates the real risk of exposure to plastics on human health and disease. I am certainly of the ilk that I think that things like cancer are actually caused by nano and microplastics, causing the DNA to wobble and cause cancers. But it's tough to find that element inside a cancer mass. It just wasn't looked for in the past. Anyway. Let's keep going. This next article is over in Non-Sequitur News. Team says that they've recreated DeepSeek's OpenAI killer for literally $30. You might have heard the hardware guru that crammed a video game Doom into a pregnancy test. Well, the AI... Well, I don't know what happened today. It's all AI and pregnancy, apparently. Well, the AI geek equivalent just figured out how to reproduce DeepSeek's buzzy tech with the cost of a few dozen eggs. Yeah, eggs are getting really expensive, folks. Jai Pan, a PhD candidate at the University of California, Berkeley, claims that he and his AI research team have recreated core functions of DeepSeek's R10 for just $30. They say comically more limited budget than DeepSeek, but here's the problem. DeepSeek apparently distilled OpenAI. OpenAI essentially distilled human creativity. And this company is probably distilling DeepSeek. And so the costs are going down because the predecessors are the shoulders on which they are standing. So let's see here what this article has to say. Joe Wilkins, for a section called Potato AI, under the futurism.com banner, put the article together, and the deck statement says the results, it just works. But this next article that we're going to talk about is kind of hinting at where I'm coming from. Take it with a grain of salt until other experts weigh in and test it for themselves, but the assertion, and particularly its bargain basement price tag, is yet another illustration that the discourse in AI research is rapidly shifting from a paradigm of ultra-intensive computation powered by huge data centers to efficient solutions that call the financial model of major players like OpenAI into question. But no, that is not what's happening. It is really easy. It is dramatically cheaper to take everybody else's fundamental research, retool it a little bit, and say that you develop something amazing, and then you don't give any credit or anything like that. But it's easier to build a car when somebody else designs the doors and fabricates the metal, and all you do is bolt shit together. So no, it isn't like that. If you were to do this in a vacuum and not have any, if you had never broached the giants before you, you would incur so much cost because you would have to do what everybody else has done. That's why it's a whole lot cheaper to break into a computer system and steal all of the information than it is to gather all of the information yourself. This is just intellectually dishonest. It says in a post announcing the team's findings on the website formerly known as Twitter, Pan said that the researchers trained their model around the countdown game, a number of operations exercise in which players create equations from a set of numbers to reach a predetermined answer. If they think that that's what they got to from a 671 billion parameter AI by just doing this, it is distillation. Though R10 is a small language model at 3 billion parameters, compare it to its heavyweight brother, which I haven't been able to download. It's taken me a full day to only get 16 gigs of its 404 gig model because it's really fast in the beginning and then it slows down dramatically. I've tried it for 3 days now, 4 days now, and I can't get the whole damn thing without having to stop because I have to do other things. Anyway, R1 is a massive system, and it is the distilled, based on what researchers are saying and OpenAI is saying, DeepSeek R1 is the distilled version of OpenAI's model. At one point, a researcher asked the R1 model, DeepSeek's R1 model, who it was created by, and it actually spit out OpenAI, which I found quite compelling. But others have said that, well, maybe it hallucinated because that's what AIs do. So it's quite intriguing. So I'm going to end up watching this. It says here, if reproducing a model like TinyZero can be done with less than $30 and only a few days of work, then what do big tech conglomerates need $500 billion in AI infrastructure for? Fundamental research. That is what they need it for. And it isn't something, I mean, I think that it's unsettling that it's turning somebody into a billionaire by having a not-for-profit model doing the fundamental research, but then all of its outputs are being used in a for-profit model, and it's turning people into billionaires. I find that unsettling, mainly because it's taking the world's knowledge and distilling it into an AI, which is slowly going to be replacing humans, particularly when it applies to expert systems and consultants like myself. Am I biased? No, because I get to pick and choose who I work with. And so I'm not worried about AI. I am actually utilizing AI, but I don't trust AI. AI, I think, is a mishmash of psychosis spit out, and people either accept it or they don't. It's hallucinating garbage. It doesn't cite its sources in a reliable manner, and anybody who trusts it without doing all of the due diligence that would be necessary to make yourself an expert in the topic is eventually going to be bit by the information they promote. So we'll see who gets in trouble as time goes on and people use AI. I have no problem with generative AI because it doesn't really do anything. It creates, and you have to, click the shutter on the camera again and again and again, hundreds or thousands of times to find something that you agree with. And that's what arguably creative generative AI is. It is just making stuff up, and that's fine. Again, just don't use it in academia. Don't use it in a professional setting. It will come back to haunt you. And by professional setting, I mean like academia, your business, in terms of like contract writing or using the information that it spits out as factual without you going and vetting every single syllable of a word. You better make sure that it is legit and you know it as fact. Anyway, let's keep going. So this next article is, again, all about AI. Not all of these are about AI, by the way. We move on to other things here. But this is what was submitted, and so I'm using this. So this next article is over in Non Sequitur News. All of the shows that I talk about, or all of the headlines that I talk about, are aggregated into 6 main categories and then 50 sub-channels within it. And we do 7 shows each week. One is daily, Non Sequitur News, and then 6 weeklies. So if you think anyone in the AI industry has any idea what they're doing, it appears that DeepSeek just accidentally leaked its users' chats. So DeepSeek has already changed the AI game. Researchers at the cloud security company Wiz were poking around the back end of the groundbreaking OpenAI or open source models databases when they discovered within minutes that they were able to access a trove of completely unencrypted internal data with ease. This data contained a significant volume of chat history, back-end data, sensitive information, including log streams, API secrets, operational details. Even worse, it's wide open backdoor, but this is not your local one. This is the one that is the app. I can almost guarantee it, because you can actually use the downloaded local model in various forms, and it never, the clients that you utilize might ping the internet, but you can actually block that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, Noor Al-Sabai over at The Byte in futurism.com put this article together, and they say, as Wiz noted in its report on the glaring vulnerability, DeepSeek immediately took action to secure its databases once the security researchers alerted the company to the exposure. And this is the app and web interface, not the downloaded database of DeepSeek R1 in the various distillations therein. There's about 8 distilled versions of it, and then the big 671 billion parameter 404 gigabyte AI model. It's pretty huge, and so you need a server, and to run it efficiently, effectively, that larger model, you really do need closer to 512 gigs of RAM and basically server grade hardware, not just your desktop. The distilled ones run dramatically slower as you increase the number of parameters. But so again, this is the app version of it, or the hosted version of it. When accessing DeepSeek's databases, Wiz researchers found out a lot about the way the company's models operate, including that its infrastructure mimics OpenAI's almost exactly. If you remember what I said just previously, well, now you know why it mimics OpenAI's almost exactly. This level of intelligence about a company that's exploded in popularity is relatively safe in the hands of white hat hackers, but the researchers told Wired that if anyone else got into DeepSeek's databases before they did, an incredibly unchallenging feat, they said, as they indicated repeatedly, they could have made away with as much internal data as they wanted with minimum effort. So yeah, and as you get bigger and badder, there's always somebody that wants to come and you know, break into your back door, so to speak. And you have to be careful. You have to be alert at all times. This can happen with relative ease because you're not necessarily prone to being obsessive about security, and you can't always patch everything. There's always a weakness. Somebody just has to find it. So they say here that the deck statement for this whole article is the service is not mature enough to be used with any sensitive data at all. And I don't think that AI should be used with sensitive data at all. If you want to use it to be creative, if you want something to help you break writer's block, if you want to just use it out of curiosity of what it might spit out, fine, go for it. But do not use it. At this stage of the game, I think it's unethical to act on anything that an AI says or spits out. But analytics, if it's finely attuned and you can vet it and verify that its outputs are effective for things like data analysis or prediction based on various inputs, and it's very constrained, fine. But you take that kind of risk into your own hands. But some people, like attorneys, police, and others, utilize AI outputs as fact. And things like the Horizon fiasco in the UK takes place, where the computer system says that these 900, actually, I think it's up to 1,400 people are guilty of criminal activity, when in fact the software was faulty and people knew about it at the time. So yeah, quite troubling. Don't trust AI for anything other than creative output, right? Like Midjourney, let Midjourney do whatever it wants. I mean, obviously you need to protect yourself as an artist, but Midjourney is going to Midjourney, but its stuff isn't going to harm anyone in any substantive way. But an attorney using ChatGPT can certainly ruin somebody's life because the attorney's a dipshit. All right. Well, anyway, let's keep on moving. This next article is over in Non Sequitur News. Hawaii can get more snow than New York City has this year. A winter storm skirting Kauai on Thursday, that's yesterday because this is a Time Machine episode, it's actually today, will soon bring flood-inducing rains, strong winds, and even heavy snow across Hawaii. And that is because climate change causes disruption. Anna Skinner over at Newsweek.com put this article together. It was snowing in Florida. It was snowing in North Carolina. It was wild this last week. It was so weird. So the winter storm warning is in effect from noon local time on Thursday through Saturday morning for Big Island summits. The alert said heavy snow expected with total accumulation between 12 and 24 inches. Strong winds as high as 85 miles per hour and the equivalent of a Category 1 hurricane will cause considerable blowing and drifting snow. Pretty wild. I don't know that much about Hawaiian weather or if it's something that happens regularly. But the article says, despite Hawaii being more commonly known as a warm climate, it's not unusual for snow to fall on the state's volcanic peaks, given their altitude, and blizzard warnings have been issued during the winter months. I'm really curious when, how often that happens. The city's seasonal average to date is 13.5 inches in New York City, so 5.8 inches of snow the entire winter season so far, but we'll see. Let's go on. Our next article is over in the Mobile Channel. EA apparently thinks that there's an art to firing people. A decent number of devs at BioWare, people who have given us all kinds of classics, have fallen victim to yet another round of layoffs, this time under the guise of restructuring. The idea being that EA and BioWare don't see the need for a full team working on Mass Effect 5. Well, I hope that the people have, vested interest in the the success of the enterprise and the programs, the software, the games, the solutions, and that as the company still benefits, their stock options, right, they get vested and they can sell their stock and benefit. I mean, that's kind of how it happens. You can either get paid a cash amount and have no interest at stake in the company, or you get a combination. It's a benefits package. And so you fight for that when you get hired and as an ongoing concern. When you get a review period, you say, I've done this shit and I think that you should pay me more or give me more stock or whatever. And that's how it works. The only problem is, depending on the terms, you can get terminated before your stocks vest, and the company can do some weird machinations to basically, I'll put it delicately, financially kick you in the taint. So there's a constant feeling of whiplash being a gamer now because of how these companies move. You can look forward to a game one day, and the next you're screaming from the rooftops about how terribly they're treating the devs. The layoff itself is ridiculous, but the way it was done, horrible. They say BioWare's devs deserve better, EA, all devs do. I fully agree with that because the company would not exist if not for the software developers, the engineers, the artists, the writers, everybody that's involved in this thing. And I certainly believe that a company like a software development company should be wholly owned by the people that build the software, the employees. It should be employee owned, and investors should naturally get a piece of the action. They're the ones that are putting some money in it, but the ones that really have everything on the line because they're working there, they're getting their money from them, and they're sometimes working from month to month because they don't have, you know, a shit ton of liquid assets that they can just dump into a project and then wait for it to deliver. They're working, you know, they're day-to-day employees. I don't think that they should be treated like this at all, ever. But until, I guess, the dynamic changes, you have this sociopathic drive to keep the enterprise going. And I understand this. You keep the enterprise going and you have to make the decision. Like, I've hired and fired people. You have to fire people sometimes because the runway is too short, but come on now, you've got people that are making millions of dollars at the cost of millions of dollars that should be going to the employees that are the day-to-day boots on the ground, fingers on the keyboard, you know, stylus in hand kind of thing. Give more to the employees so that your ongoing concern can be an ongoing concern. I just don't see people taking pay cuts to pay their employees more. There are sometimes, but it seems to be rare. It seems to be in really small companies. And research has shown that as MBAs move into the CEO position, they will treat everybody, employees, like shit and concentrate power, influence, and wealth in the executive suite. And just look around. That's exactly what's going on. You know, minimum wage has not increased since like 1976 or something like that. I can't remember right now, but it's ridiculous. So people are basically being let go. So given this stage of, they say, so here comes BioWare with one of the weirdest statements that they've ever seen announcing a layoff. This sounds like there's a fork in the road type of writing. Given this stage of development, we don't require support from the full studio. We have worked diligently over the past few months to match many of our colleagues with other teams at EA that had open roles that were a strong fit. So basically, BioWare is dissolved, right? So you fired a bunch of people and then tried to stuff as many of them as you could into other roles somewhere. Well, what about those you couldn't shuffle? They're just screwed. Make no mistake, it's one of the nastiest moves this author has seen a company make at a time. But unfortunately, that is business. Anthony Franklin II put this article together over at Vice.com. And again, until the sociopathic aspect of business is removed, where greed is good and money is the amoral element and driver of why a business exists, right? We know that that's the mantra. Business school drives that into people. The objective is to make money at all costs, really. You know, if there weren't external social controls, companies would abuse the ever-living crap out of society. And we know that because people have been poisoned by products that have been put on the market, where they find out later when people do an investigation, they knew that these products were bad. Like we still have Red 40 and Red 3. Red 3 is just removed, but the EU has already gotten rid of it because they know that it's bad. Anyway, yeah, the sociopathic aspect of business is a problem, and it has been ever since the whole one objective of business being to make money. It used to not be that way. It has always been that way to a certain extent, but you solve a problem, and in solving the problem, you make money because you are providing a solution. That is what business should be. You create a good. It's a good, right? You benefit society and make money in the process of it. But that's not really where it's at. Anyway, let's keep on moving. We've got four more articles, including this one, to get through. I'm looking forward to the Summer Game Fest. It returns to the YouTube Theater on June 6th. This year's Summer Game Fest live stream is set for June 6th, 5 p.m. Eastern. The two-hour event will be held at the YouTube Theater in Los Angeles. The organizers say gamers should expect world premieres, special guests, and a look at what's next. Event steward Jeff Keighley promises lots of exciting things ahead. I stream this live and talk about it for basically the week that this thing lands on. And then I play some of the games and kind of talk about it during my summer of stream when I get to concentrate more on streaming. Lawrence Bonk over at Engadget.com put this article together. See, mayoral duties subside during the summer, and I'm able to kind of chill a little bit more and stream more and play some games and hang out more. So that's what I'm looking forward to. It says the following days will be the annual Play Days media event produced by IM8Bit. This is an invite-only exhibit held in downtown LA that will feature more than 40 of the gaming industry's top publishers. And there you have the little banner. It was published over in the website formerly known as Twitter. Everybody switch to Blue Sky. Go. I'll wait. No? Okay. So I will see you then, and I look forward to seeing these new games. It'll be a blast. All right, let's keep going. This next article is over in Technology Today. An extremely violent global pandemic as a mysterious disease wipes out sea urchins worldwide. There's growing concern about the worldwide expansion of coral reef destruction. A research team says that this is an extremely violent global pandemic. The Caribbean, Red Sea, Indian Ocean are critical regions for the world's coral reefs, and the mortality rates of sea urchins in these areas are very high, over 90%. So I guess urchin is going to be much more expensive this year. Hello, Timeless. Good to see ya. Oh, really? Sorry. So Timeless underscore EXE is a co-host with Dunkstar, D-U-N-C-S-T-A-R. For those who are getting this via the podcast, they stream together at twitch.tv/Dunkstar, D-U-N-C-S-T-A-R, and Timeless underscore EXE streams their own from time to time, usually the weekend. I think it is. Basically, I follow them. I'm in their channel every night, and then I get I am told at some point Timeless is streaming. So obviously my recommendation is to go to both and follow them. They are a blast. Man, all day. It's been a blast today too. So anyway, go and check them out. So Timeless said it's unfortunate, but we lost some of the writers responsible for characters like Morden and Legion from the original series. Yeah, there were something like in 2024, 10,000 people were fired in the gaming from the gaming industry. It's just kind of rough. And to me, a lot of the people, let me just back up to this EA game thing. I don't know if it took a long time for that to appear in my chat, but the way that I see it, and I kind of alluded to it when I was talking about the games, the way I see it is people are dedicating their life, and I don't think that they really anticipate being just fired. And there's zero loyalty now in many businesses. It used to be back in the day, people were loyal to the company and the company was loyal to them. But nowadays, it seems like nobody is loyal to anybody else. And there's a lot of churn. Some people will stay for 5 years or 10 years. Some people will seemingly be able to survive the corporate culture shifting. But largely, it seems like, you know, between that 5 and 10 year range, everybody gets replaced. I'm not really in the industry, but I just hear a bunch of stuff from time to time. So unfortunately, they dedicate their life to it. They might get some a stock and payment package, and then they're done. And they just have to bow out and go somewhere else. So yeah, Timeless isn't, and yeah, loyalty isn't really rewarded, but most CEOs probably don't even know the names of the people working under them. Yeah. Other than the C-suite and you know, some really close-knit administrators. I see that pretty regularly. Okay, so let me keep going. The Summer Game Fest is what I'm looking forward to. And then we moved on to the Sea Urchin basically die off, just like what happened with Coral Reef around the world. This extremely violent global pandemic is hitting coral reefs and sea urchins. Tel Aviv University put it together. The article is posted over at SciTech Daily. An international research team led by scientists from Tel Aviv University have identified the pathogen responsible for mass sea urchin deaths along the Red Sea coast as the same one causing widespread mortality off Reunion Island in the Indian Ocean. So the same pathogen is killing the sea urchins everywhere. The study, they don't even, do they? Because we have talked about this before. The coral die-off and a pathogen, yeah, diadema. They say here, this is a first-rate ecological disaster, explains Dr. Bronstein. Sea urchins are vital to the health of coral reefs. They act as the gardeners of the reef by feeding on algae, preventing it from overgrowing and suffocating the coral, which competes with algae for sunlight. In 1983, a mysterious disease wiped out most of the diadema sea urchins in the Caribbean. Unchecked, the algae proliferated, blocking sunlight from the coral, and the region shifted from a coral reef ecosystem to an algae-dominated one. Even 40 years later, the sea urchin population, and consequently the reef, has not recovered. So yeah, they're saying that it's a recurring threat. In 2022, the disease reemerged in the Caribbean. A year later, in early 2023, they were the first, Dr. Bronstein was the first to identify mortality events among long-spined sea urchins close to the, or a close relative to the Caribbean sea urchin in the Red Sea. So, oh wow. Just the beaches are just lined up with dead sea urchins. So they say now using genetic tools, Dr. Bronstein and his international colleagues have shown that the same ciliate parasite, is responsible for similar mortality events off the coast of Reunion Island in the Indian Ocean. They literally have to find a needle in a haystack. So, timeless. How can you? As much as I dislike sea urchins, it's never a good sign when the world's biodiversity takes another knock. Indeed. Yeah. But, you know, it's hard to really like sea urchins because they're little pricks. And they poke into stuff. They poke their noses everywhere. Right? Anyway, and their jokes are needles, you know? They jab you. I don't know. Anyway, the next article is over in the Model Channel. And it's two were jailed for posing as learner drivers to sit theory test. Now, this is Ireland code. Timeless got the point of all of my jokes. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. So this is code for us Americans and anybody else who doesn't know what this is. But learner drivers are people that are trying to get their driver's license and sit for the theory test. You basically answer the questions. Two people involved in a scheme to pose as learner drivers and sit the theory test for others have been jailed at the Circuit Criminal Court. These people basically became, I'm not sure if it's the equivalent of becoming a felon, but these two, 129, 142, took 1,000 or 2,000 euros to euro to sit for a test so that somebody else could get their driver's license. And it is mind-boggling that somebody would go to this extent for you have to show ID and prove that you are who you are. I don't know how they got away with it. The judge said it appeared those who availed of the service had no great understanding of the English language and wanted to get someone else to take the test for them. The two were accused a part of a group of five people involved in the scheme to take the theory test on behalf of others using a computerized system at test centers. I don't know how they would have gotten away with it. Glant's home was searched by the police, the equivalent of the police. Seven prepaid debit cards registered with false names and addresses were found, and the cards were used to book over 100 theory tests. Driver theory test books and sums of cash in sterling and euro were also recovered, and Glant's phone was seized. So it's apparently a long-term thing. Somebody else was jailed previously. Had 30 previous convictions, including deception, theft, road traffic offenses. Road traffic doesn't mean anything to anybody, but anyway. Wow. Okay, well, there's a whole lot more to this. It looks like there was enough here that it could fill. Wow, these people. You know, there's this thing called a rap sheet that people joke about kind of on police procedurals. They have a rap sheet a mile long. That's what this article is. Yeah, because the two apparently have quite the history. Alina Glant and Daniel Stepien. I don't normally mention the names, but wow. This article is pretty expansive. Anyway, Vivian Trainer over at RTE.ie, which is an Irish news outlet that covers United States stuff from time to time. So I find it interesting when I read about stuff over in Ireland as well. All right, let's do our last article and then we're going to shut down and reset. And we're going to try and do the non sequitur news for the 31st as well today. But it's going to be a little bit because I still have to audit stuff. But anyway, our last article is over in the Mobile Channel. Officials are offering $1 million to anyone who can decode this ancient script. The enigmatic Indus Valley civilization left behind a script that today's historians haven't yet deciphered. While amateur theories abound, scholars are increasingly relying on computer science to crack the code. I took a jab at this with several AIs, but none of them could decode anything, so sorry, folks. I didn't get $1 million. But this article is over at SmithsonianMag.com. Eli Wisevich put the article together. The deck statement is the one that I said previously. And they say, more than 5,300 years ago, civilization emerged along the lush basins of the Indus River in present-day northwest India and Pakistan. Its residents, mostly farmers and traders, lived in cities of baked brick, making it one of the world's earliest urban civilizations. But around 2500 BCE, residents migrated away from the big cities like Harappa and Mohenjo-Daro, with estimated peak populations of 80,000 residents combined, and dispersed into smaller villages in the foothills, and started the phrase, "Get off my lawn," and try that in a small town. Eventually, the Indus Valley civilization faded away, left behind artifacts and archaeological sites that have kept scholars busy for centuries, many featuring a mysterious script that nobody has yet been able to read. And so here is the Indus River Valley. If you're looking at the, or if you're listening to this via the podcast, there's a little snapshot image from the ISS of the region. But I'm going to get right down here to what they are providing. A common type of Indus Valley seal featuring several signs above a unicorn figure, but it doesn't seem to me like it's a unicorn figure. I think it's just directly on to a horned animal. And so both horns are in the same shape, you know, and you're looking at its side view. But for whatever reason, they're saying that it's a unicorn figure and an unidentified object. So whatever this is, and it looks kind of like, you know, those things that have a ball attached to a string and you try and lift it up and catch it inside the little cup. And that's kind of what it looks like to me. I don't know what it really is. But yeah, so it has those two things. But the script that they're talking about is at the top of this little, for lack of another term, a tile. They call it a seal. It looks like a chop that you would find like to press down on wax or something like that. I don't know what the size of this is, but these characters are what they're trying to decipher. So it looks like somebody bent a wagon wheel, and then there's what looks like maybe a brush, and then two maracas, and then I don't know what these eight little finger sandwiches are, I don't know, and then a person, it looks like, maybe, and then a bow, and then two hearts. So whoever this is, they've only got two hearts left for their character, and they need to bring whatever these sticks are on a wagon back home, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's the RPG player in me. Thomas says, $1 million. Let me add it. I'll solve it by the end of the week. And just let me dig out my old decoder ring. Are you that old, Timeless, that you've got a Indus Valley decoder ring? Is it made out of clay? Scholars like Rayo, they mentioned them person earlier, have increasingly turned to computer science and machine learning tools to identify patterns in the arrangement of these signs and symbols using data set from the Indus signs. For instance, Nisha Yadav, a computer scientist at the Tata Institute of Fundamental Research in Mumbai, determined that 67 signs account for about 80% of the written script. So it's going to be real damn tough to decipher it because there's only so many characters, right? So you may have a whole bunch of characters or very few characters, and in one way or the other, they line up to have cultural and temporal context that doesn't apply. And so you have to dig and dig and dig and find more and more things that point at the meaning of something. And then eventually you find something like the Rosetta Stone, or just you brute force it. But this is essentially cryptography, and you don't even have the beginnings of a key or any contextual understanding of why these characters are put at the top of a seal. And then a bull and some, I don't know what the hell that is sitting there. So good luck. I would love to know when we actually decipher it, because this Indus Valley script is one of the things that I've heard about from time to time, because I'm always curious about what is essentially the history of humanity, not just some region, but this can tell us more about who and what we are as a whole. And then once you find this, you dig a little deeper and there's more, and you dig a little deeper and there's more. And when I say dig a little deeper, I'm serious about digging. It's, this stuff is under dirt. It isn't just sitting on the surface somewhere. We have to dig to find our history. Because over the millennia, we've just covered up what was left behind and built on top, without really accepting that these, without even stating, as a whole species of people, you know, humanity doesn't acknowledge that certain regions are important and wholly willfully go digging to find it, because I think there's a lot of people that are afraid of what might be found, might impugn the historical accepted provenance of how things went down. So anyway, I tend to pick fights when I end up saying stuff like that, because there's a whole lot more to it, and I don't know, there's a lot of protectionism and stuff. People don't like talking about it. At any rate, Eli Wisevich put this article together for SmithsonianMag.com. Go over, you can follow the links that are in the chat. They are also over on YouTube in the live broadcast of this, because I stream to YouTube and to Twitch at the same time. But Twitch deletes everything. So putting all of the show notes in there, after 60 days, it goes away. So just go over to YouTube and follow and like over there. That would be tremendously helpful. It'll be in the show notes for the podcast when it gets posted. We are up to date up until the 29th. This is the 30th episode. But I was running late and I couldn't get to the show yesterday. My mayoral duties prevented me. So come on, Summer of Stream. I'm looking forward to my mayoral duties lightening dramatically. All right. Well, anyway, that is it. And so I am going to throw us into our AI that's going to decipher how to find our way back to the front page of ohmtown.com. Ta-da, look, it's that easy. You can sign in or sign up. It's a piece of cake. And I don't spam you with anything other than notices that we're going live. And that happens a lot on the weekends. Thanks for hanging out, Timeless. Really do appreciate you hanging out and chatting with us. And unfortunately, the sentient AI isn't here to engage. Hopefully, we'll be here tonight. I need to have a conversation. But other than that, we are done. So take care, everybody. We'll see you soon. Stay tuned.